Welcome to Sacred Skin. I'm Open Mike Eagle. That is my rap name. And it's two-thirds of my real name. Actually, that's incorrect math. This is a beat I made. I made some of these beats, except for the ones that I didn't. I made this one, though. I made this one, and I'm not sure if that matters at all. Hey, I got a new contest, you guys. And to the old winners, your prize, it's still here with me in my closet. It's yours, but you can't have it yet, because I don't want to go to the post office. You're going to get it, though. I promise. You guys remember what the prize was? Okay, I'll tell you. It's a nice, luxurious American Apparel t-shirt with the logo of one podcast you may be familiar with. This one. It's a Sacred Skin t-shirt with the Sacred Skin logo. Time magazine says it's the comfiest logo in Black people's podcast history. It's Time magazine, folks. They're at the grocery store. If you didn't win anything and you still want to buy a shirt, you can pay for it at openmikeeagle.bigcartel.com. There. So one shirt goes to whomever can name the source that this beat came from without cheating. I'll know if you cheated. I can see you right now. You got a little something in your teeth. I just watched SummerSlam. I have thoughts. And one of those thoughts is that this isn't a wrestling podcast, so I should keep my thoughts to myself. St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm back at you October 3rd with Aesop Rock, Shabazz Palace's Doomtree, Trash Talk, and more at CHS Field. And ladies and gentlemen, I've been told they play baseball there. I talked to Billy Woods on this episode. He's a super dope New York rapper dude. He keeps his face hidden at all times except for at rap shows where his face is perfectly on display. We have a bunch of songs together, and you should listen to all of them. This is Sacred Skin. Yeah, dude, I really despise going to studios. Like, I'm even thinking about it here now. I'm like, I feel like I'm about to start sweating.
What's funny is when I started working with Willie Green, he worked at like a real studio.
Yeah.
And so it was like, you would go up in there and you'd be like, they got the menu book.
The menu book or what?
Oh, you're not familiar with this?
Uh-uh.
Okay, so like he worked at, and I'm talking about a real studio, like Midtown Manhattan.
Oh,
like
okay.
Kanye West might pass you in the hallway or whatever.
No,
I didn't belong there. You know, but he made some things happen, whatever. So you're in there, and the first thing is when you go in there, there's a menu book.
What is
and that's it? Like a binder full of all of the places that will deliver there.
Oh.
And so all of their menus.
Okay.
And so you just go up in there, you roll in your tree, this, you know, you roll in your trees, whatever, whatever. They're playing the beat, and you know this is $1 million studio, so the beats are pounding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They got the man.
Four sets of monitors all behind you and in front of you.
You're flipping through.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get the crab fried rice. Throw an extra shit in there, just like yeah.
See?
The Kung Pao chicken.
See, but that's the thing, because now I'm thinking about when the delivery dude get here, I'm going to feel like I should have been finished already. You know what I mean?
Well, like, this was back in the day, so then you also felt like this is in the time. See, I feel like there was a whole era where it'd be all right to like go to the studio and start like writing.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like building your shit.
Mm-mm.
And I couldn't even imagine. Preposterous.
Yeah, I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, okay, so what's the last studio that you actually went to?
I'm trying to think. I mean, there's a studio here called Cosmic Zoo. I end up doing stuff at sometimes just because like some of my homies like to record there. And it's not like, I mean, they got great equipment, but it's not like a super...
Well, those studios don't even exist really anymore.
I mean, okay, you know what? I was doing some voiceover work the other day for this dude's web series. And the place I went there to record was like a real place, like, you know, it was really real control rooms and padding everywhere, and it's like dark and there's glass
teak wood or oak or something.
Something thick, you know what I mean? And that was the real place, but I wasn't rapping, so it was cool. I was just reading the script, so it was fine, you know what I mean? Like rapping, I hate, and that's the thing. I think with me, I'm just not like I like feeling comfortable enough to take every risk I can think of while I'm recording, and I get so concerned with like wasting other people's time. You know what I mean? I can't like, I'm not, my confidence is fucked up.
Yes.
In a studio setting sometimes. But that's like that is your main mode. Like that's the only mode.
That's the only mode. I've never had a home studio. Although I've at many points hoped and wished that I had one, I did not. But this is an interesting line of conversation because it has allowed me to be in a lot of different recording situations and mm-hmm. see how people do shit.
Right.
So like at Green's, you know, it's very, even though now it's like he records.
Willie Green, producer that you've worked with a whole lot. Yeah. I've worked with some.
Yes, yeah. Willie Green of Nightmares.
Right.
I've worked with him for a long time, so it's somewhat chill and relaxed, but he has a lot of cut. Like nowadays, I go to the studio, it's very like, we have X amount of time to do whatever you need, you know.
And so what's the average amount of time?
Honestly, the last time I really recorded a lot of a project there was Dour Candy.
Okay.
All of Dour Candy was
That's
done
the project
there.
You did with Blockhead.
Yeah, that was a project with Blockhead. And like on Today I Wrote Nothing on the last album, like we recorded U-Boats there and he came up with a special setup for me and Elucid to go back and forth and shit.
Ooh, okay.
Like we were where we were kind of facing each other.
That's tight.
Offset. It was really good. It was dope.
First above us is covered, dive till whole shutters, no rudder, amber grease, whale blubber. The sea is a beast, land loving street for wives, mothers. Bleach bones thrown on rocky beach, beset by buzzards.
Study science in itself, formed 43 kings, Cork welts, Orion's belt, still sag. Lightning cast in a trap house, supply and bag. Speed up on last eight, feeling fatalistic.
Blood in the water, you dead on this corner. Blood in the
water. Then, like, now, Elucid and I record a lot with him because he has his own whole home setup or whatever. And so anyway, his situation is totally different because it'll be like, you get there and you can't really rush Elucid to do anything.
Of course, he's an MC.
Yeah,
he's on his own time.
He's doing his own thing. He lives with his brother who's also a producer. So it'll be like, we're just finishing XYZ.
Right.
Help yourself to some water or whatever. And they have this whole house that they live in East New York. So it's just a whole different scene. And then when you do record, you go to the room. And whereas more like with Green, he's off in like a control room, so you record, and then you get the disembodied voice in your headphones.
Yeah.
You know, where Elucid will be sitting right like on the couch or bed or whatever.
Looking at you.
Yeah, and he's just like, and he's hearing the whole thing with no beats. So you can't really be like,
can't give you great
feedback.
Yeah,
yeah. So he'll be like, okay, well, and then we'll listen to it.
So who's actually
back.
Engineering if he's sitting there with you?
He's engineering it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's sitting there doing whatever. I don't know what he's doing because my back is turned. he could be laughing at me.
Making
or
faces.
Yeah, probably. He's probably on his phone. So it's seen that, and then there's other people you go and do, like your... Like, I had to do a verse for this cat, June Classic, great guy, great artist.
I know the name. I'm not familiar with the work.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He's from Queens and used to be affiliated with, like, Monster Island and has his own thing going now. He's a great dude. And so I had to do this verse for him, and I'm mad behind him doing it. And he's like, I'll just come through. Like, he's come through my place before with, like, a setup that he'll just set up in my house and, like, record it there. Sometimes I've recorded stuff with like AM Breakups and Jeff Markey, which is a whole different thing because it's like they're younger than me and there might be like a whole bunch of people there, graffiti artists, or it's just a whole
it's more
different
of a scene, it's crime a whole scene situation.
You know, and then I just come through like, yeah, I gotta do this verse or whatever. So I don't know. You get an insight, or like last time I saw Aesop, I actually was looking, I went in his place, and I guess he had only been there for X amount of time or whatever.
He was up in Portland?
Yeah, this is in Portland. And so I was there, so he was like, come through, whatever. So I'm like, of course, you know, I'm a big fan, so go through. We're hanging out. Your man's apartment basically had like a couch, a couple other accoutrements.
Yeah. If you could even,
A cat, which I love cats. So there's a cat, and then a giant, like, floor to ceiling actual
booth.
Just like,
he built a booth.
It's an actual booth. And I was like, all right, what's the deal with that? And he was like, no, I just take that everywhere. You can break it down, carry it with you.
It's a real booth. It's like the kind of booth that makes me nervous, except that it's in somebody's house.
Yes, it's like he took the booth from the $1 million studio and just put it and made it something that he just puts in the center of his living room.
It's fantastic. I mean, I am at the place I used to live in before right now. I had my studio set up in this little off room that was like an office, and there was this little spot in the apartment where the two bedrooms and the office adjoined. But there were doors on all sides of it. So, like, I had this little booth. Like, you know what I mean? I put mattress padding on all of the doors. And so I had, like, mattress padding on three sides. And I had put a blanket up behind me. And I was like, yeah.
Hold on. So what album did you record there?
I recorded Unapologetic Art Rap there. I recorded Rappers Without Natural Causes there. I recorded a lot of most of Animal Hospital there, and all of the EPs in between all of those, all that stuff was recorded there. I mean, you mentioned you were talking about your last project, which is Today I Wrote Nothing. You were talking about that earlier. You said, I'm guessing you made the majority of Dower Candy, and I'm guessing the majority of History Will Absolve Me. You made it Willie Green, or you recorded it Willie Green.
Was with Will. Yeah, yeah, he was definitely like. I know he has some type of title on that project because we're about to repress it to vinyl.
Tight.
And so I had to go through.
History Will Absolve Me.
Yeah, we're going to do History Will Absolve Me on vinyl. And so I had to go through the liner notes and kind of figure out. And I was like, I think Willie Green was like the A&R on that or something. Tight. Yeah.
But on Today I Wrote Nothing, if you didn't record most of that with him, how'd you record it?
I recorded most of that with the Lucid in East New York.
Okay.
And so that was cool. I mean, that's the other thing, because it adds this whole aspect into it, like traveling to and from all these different places. I don't know, like Camouflage, I recorded all in like Westchester.
Okay.
And I used to have to take Metro North up there, and like I would stay at this house in Yonkers and sleep on the couch and literally be there for like the weekend, because at that point, that was the point in rapping at which like, if I recorded five songs, one of them was perhaps usable. You know, I don't know if you were ever at that.
I'm always at that place, constantly.
Okay, all right. That's
where I live.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
all right. So this one I was doing a Lucid. I moved to East New York by then, because before that he lived in Fort Greene.
Okay.
And it's like everything's nice. You're like, you know, walking past places, I might get a kale salad. You know what I mean? Like, it's just white women running with yoga mats.
Right.
Various dogs.
Running with the mat. That's tight.
Black people, you know, strolling, perhaps a book in, you know, some sort of paperback.
Maybe somebody playing chess.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Some of these Zora Neale Hurston paperback or Myrtle.
Let's do it.
Those sorts of things can happen, you know, kindly smiles and so forth. And then he moved out to this place in East New York where his family had this house, like brownstone, that took over, and it's cool, but it's definitely like, it's rugged. And I used to like, it's not like the rugged part of East New York though.
Right.
But it's still rugged enough. For sure. You know? And so it's like, you'll be recording, blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, all right, I'm about to jet. And you're like, ah, it's 2 a.m. So there's two paths to this train.
Mm.
Or, well, there's different choices. I could get on the A train on the corner, but then I have to transfer to the L. And as a New Yorker, you're like, man, I don't want to transfer, though, because I could just get to, if I can just get to the J train, everything will be straight. But then you're trying to figure out the optimal direction. And see, the thing is, I used to live in D.C., right? Way back in the 90s or whatever. And I remember once I had this experience, I was in, I guess, the equivalent of a bodega in the neighborhood I lived in. And there was this dude, and he had like a big patch over his eye, and it was all, I don't know, he had a big patch over his eye. And I was like, he was in front of me in the line in the bodega. And then when he left out, I was like, damn, what happened to dude? And the Korean guy was working there was like, oh, he got robbed, and then he only had like $4 on him, so they pistol whipped him till it shattered his eye socket.
Jesus Christ.
And after that, I was like, man, you got to walk with some money, man. For these two.
You got to have at least $10.
At least $20,
and it might cost you a body part.
I'm not trying to play around, you know. Oh, I want to help out. Like, if you're going to rob me, I'm willing to help out.
But that's D.C., and that's the 90s.
It was the 90s.
Which is nutty. And then just like New York was crazy.
But this is East New York, man.
Okay, so it's still vestiges of how.
It's pretty. They're pretty not. Live. They're no. Nobody has a yoga mat.
No strollers. It's not happening.
And if you're caught just strolling around with a paperback, it could go wrong. So anyway, and then so it just, I like, there is some aspect to which, although I liked it better back in the day when I would go record places. And then people would still burn you a CD,
because
then on your way home you would listen and be like, either like, I totally failed,
right?
Or you'd be like, yo, this is the shit, Sean.
Yeah.
But now people are just like, yeah, I'll email you the. Maybe 2 days later, they send you like a rough mix or whatever. Except for Green. Green will have their rough mix by the time you get home. It'll be there.
What constitutes a failed attempt to you?
What constitutes a failed attempt for me is usually by that point I have an idea in my head of what it's going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go and then you're listening to it and you're like, it's not really like that, you know. And I have an unorthodox style of rapping,
very much so.
And so sometimes in my imagination I'm like at home rapping the lyrics over the beat, you know, I'm like, this is the shit.
You're right.
And then you go from there and you're like, yeah, no, it didn't really. Sometimes something isn't matching up there, or like the just various aspects of it aren't coming out to what you had in your head when you were like doing it. Although it's also important to not be like too wedded to what you imagine.
Exactly.
And try to listen to what
exists.
Because there
could be some magic that happens.
Yeah.
Unexpectedly.
32 bars on how to rob and kill your neighbors. Still got the nerve to ask God to save you. The exhale got a whole different flavor. Official policy, don't do me no favors. Oakland Raiders, empire in decline, but still got plenty paper. Pennywise, pound foolish. Bring the mountain.
straight to Muhammad, move pound stupid. Acapellas, the beans chopped it and looped it. Threw in some minor keys, bars and hooks. Only option, cop the plea, it's off the books. This year, sink the rapping up, the rapping's off, I can hear.
Let's talk about I Wrote Nothing Today.
Today I wrote nothing.
Today I wrote nothing.
I wrote nothing today.
Good, today I wrote nothing. I mean, obviously you wrote something because there's a lot of words in these songs. They're shorter. They have different energies. They move a little quicker from song to song. But what does Today I Wrote Nothing mean to you?
Well, it's an album that is pretty much about death. There's also a road trip element in it, but it's very much about death, which was inspired from a lot of things. I had a very close, this is when we get serious.
Yeah, for sure.
I had a very close friend who, when I was growing up in Africa, basically I went to Zimbabwe as a young child. I was 5 years old. We moved from the U.S. to Zimbabwe. And when I came back here, I was a couple months shy of my 13th birthday. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have a lot of childhood friends, you know, because people that I knew before that time, a lot of them I never saw again. And I don't do Facebook or anything, so it's not a lot of, like, magical reconnections with people. And even a lot of, like, my middle school and high school friends, situations didn't always work out for everybody, you know. So I don't have a lot of, like, childhood friends. At best, I have one or two people that I knew in high school that I'm still in touch with or whatever. And so anyway, I reconnected with a childhood friend from Zimbabwe who lived in New York. And a couple years ago, he found out that he was sick. Mm-hmm. And he was fighting cancer. And he actually just passed a couple months ago. Yeah. But that was very influential in the record in terms of, like, you know, dealing with death. And also death is something that has always been played a big part in all of my music and my art, I think. And growing up in Zimbabwe, when we did, there was a civil war going on and all sorts of things were happening. So it's always kind of been around me and in my music, and there were various reasons why, but that was really what the record was about. And then there's an element in there that's like a journey, but that also connects to that theme. And so that's what it was about. I was seeing somebody through a battle with cancer, and I lost some other people close to me recently, and it's something I think about all the time anyway. And I've been reading some books that were about that, so it all just added up.
But you called it Today I Wrote Nothing, and it's so much about writing.
Okay, so yes. So that's the other part of it. So I live near this this bar, and I guess gentrification, while it has its many negatives and downsides, including the fact that I'm pretty sure my landlord is scheming on my apartment as we speak.
What landlord isn't scheming on?
Touche.
Yeah.
Mr. Eagle.
Hey.
Touche.
I live in an apartment as well, as you can see. And I'm certain that my landlord is a few doors down, scheming on number 17 right now.
He's just up right now.
That's what he's doing.
He's got a protractor and a line rule.
Saying, pointing right at my forehead right now.
So, yeah, so, you know, I feel like this bar opened, like kind of a speakeasy type bar, and I enjoy drinking. And so I'm kind of a regular there. It's a cool bar. The owner's cool. They give me lots of discounts, to be honest.
That's the good shit.
And so I go there pretty often. And one time I was in there. And basically, long story short, there's this kid in there, and he's reading a book, and somehow we started having a conversation. He started talking to me about something. Then he was like, let me buy this man a drink to the bartender. It was pretty empty. So he buys me a drink, having a drink. I ask him what book he's reading. I go and, you know, I grew up in a very literary home. I fancied myself to be a writer at some level. And so I asked him about the book. He showed it to me. It was this Russian writer, Daniil Karms. And he has this, I've been in a dry spell right then when I was just like, I go through these spells where I'm like, man, everything I write is fucking garbage. Or you're just like, this is just whatever. So he shows me this book, and it's all of these like very, very short, although they're very varying length, stories, quote unquote, that like kind of confound or escape any sort of real definition of a story. They're absurdist. And I think in a lot of ways they're a reaction to, he's like an absurdist writer writing under the, like, this is the Bolshevik revolution has just happened. And so, you know, the communists take power and are like, you should write things that like relate to the revolution or like whatever, you know? And instead he has stories where, well, one of the stories, the short stories in this book is literally, today I wrote nothing. That's all, that's the whole story. And he has other stories where it's like a washerwoman saw somebody fall in the street out of her window and she started laughing. Then she fell out of her window.
Shit.
And then somebody else laughed. Then they fell out of the window. And soon, like, all of these different babushkas have fallen out of their windows. And that's the end of the story.
That's fantastic.
Or a story will just be like, and then, you know, something will happen and it'll be like, and then he went home and it's over, you know. And so I was like, this is cool. This is interesting. And I also thought, what if I just went and like wrote stuff and didn't like stress out about what is the, just go and write like a little, whatever it is that comes to you, you know? And so.
I'm going
to
pause you again real quick. Okay. Because now I actually have a question I need to probably know.
By all means.
What do you stress out about typically when it comes to like putting a project together?
You write and you're like, well, what is the point of this? What's the chorus going to be? What's the second verse going to be?
Mm-hmm.
What's like, how does this connect to the wider thing? Instead, I just went home and I was just like, write something. And so that night, I think I wrote The Big Nothing,
okay,
the first verse of it. And then I was like, I kind of like that. That's kind of cool. And I didn't need to like make it justify itself or anything like that, you know? And so then as I went along, the greater themes and bigger ideas came into the picture. But first you got to be writing.
Right.
You know, and at that point I wasn't really writing anything. So obviously, you know, you can't win if you're not in the game.
That's real.
You can't make the team in the tub.
Getting old. Your protagonist smokes at home alone. Stone. Dingy house coat, rotary phone. Hidden room where Chiba's grown. Occasionally roam, see what's gone. The chrome play keys, the elephant bone. Took the chalice with the shrug, went in Rome. Sipped the cup of destruction. Pipehead said, let me hold something. Dance like marionette. Numb to it all like I'm smoking wet.
Yellow. We've talked about before how, like, I think it would be really fantastic if there was Billy Woods Twitter and there was Billy Woods Facebook, because then when the albums drop, fucking rally, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So all about that, because I've seen it work for me and I've seen it work for other people too. Like, a lot of times in our business, release days, just the eyeballs, you know what I mean? Like, they really do gravitate towards people, and so many people are like, what's going on? What? Because I think that's just the nature of the information consumption cycle right now. It's when there's something new happening and everybody's on this day has decided that we're going to point at this thing, people really pay attention.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? And so what is the reason, the main reason that you would say that you shy away from doing specifically social media is what we're talking about,
yeah,
though.
Okay. I guess for me, a big part of it is A, I don't have a like personal social media,
mm-hmm,
so a lack of familiarity. And then B is the fact that I never felt that comfortable with like, how do you take that many like, what are you doing with these selfies? Because I don't have social media, so I don't know what I'm like. What? How many pictures of one self can you cultivate? Not that it's bad or good. I just want to know the answer because I don't know. Like, I don't have a selfie in my phone. Mm. I think the last time I probably took a selfie, a picture of myself was probably like, Jesus Christ. Maybe to go on. I think I went on an back when like you would actually go on a real date off of somebody you met on Craigslist.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's how long ago. And I think I had to take a picture through my Mac's like camera. Like
you had to take that picture for that person so they would know what you looked
so
like.
So that they would know it. And long story short, I feel like part of it is just that I've never really been comfortable. At the same time, my mother is an absolute hermit, all right?
Mm-hmm.
She is like, my mother is a writer who doesn't type, like a published author who can't type.
Wow.
She doesn't have a cell phone. She's never sent me an email.
Mm.
So.
I see.
And so. And my father, for the record, is dead. So he also has not emailed me.
You haven't gotten any emails from beyond.
There have been no emails from beyond, which I will take up with him at some point or not.
You do not have a choice. Yeah. Honestly, I think that conversation will probably take place in some form.
Some form.
Yeah.
So anyway, those are two factors. And I think another factor is just that there was a certain point in which I was like, because I had like concealed my face and stuff for various other reasons.
But I want to get to that. And I think this is a good place to ask that question. So why do you conceal your face?
Okay, so the face
as
thing.
As a friendly person.
Yes.
Why do you conceal your face?
The face thing started because when I started rapping, I had left I had left D.C. in what I would call a hurry.
Okay.
And I had concerns about the possibility that certain events could or could not follow me from that place.
That's very fair.
And due to these concerns, you know, it was one of those situations where you're like, I got away.
Not to get into too many details of this situation, which I know absolutely nothing about. Is this a legal situation or a street situation?
I felt like there had been street situations, which then could have turned into legal situations.
Absolutely. Okay. I can
And then after a certain point, it felt like, as things went along, I started to feel like, well, it's kind of interesting that like I don't have my face out there, and it's not like, you know, I'm not a teen heartthrob. I'm not gonna make Tiger beats. So I was like,
Tiger beat.
I was like, we could keep rolling like this.
It's been some crazy looking people on Yo.
That's true. And so you know, I just kept rolling with it. And then at a certain point, it became like, because I remember there was a period where people would be like, I know you're trying to like do your little rap thing, but you got to get your choruses like that. Or like at live shows, they'd be like, yo, you got to. And I mean, I had a lot to get better on with my live shows. But it'd be like, yo, you got to engage the crowd and be like, have something where it's like, everybody on this side say this. Everybody on this side say that. And I was like, I'm not against that, but it's not really my. It's not really me.
I mean, honestly, they're giving you 1994 advice is what they're doing.
You know? Or they're like, you got to. So anyway, all of these things. And I remember one of them at a certain point. This is maybe when I was working on that Reavers record. A couple people were like, yo, you got to start showing your face. Be more like out. And this is before, like, really. This is like the MySpace era.
Now,
so
you put out albums at this point?
Yeah.
Okay. And in accordance with these albums, you had intentionally not shown your face as you, like, blurred it or something intentionally?
Or stayed away from eyes or something. And so I just was like, I always was like, well, the bad part is that if you haven't shown it yet, once you do, that's over.
Yeah. It's a piece of mystery that you can never have
again. You can't have it back. And so, like, if you don't show your face and you totally fail, then you can be like, well, sucked. Maybe I did the wrong thing, but I did it my way. At least. Right. If I go and I show my face and then I fail, then I'm going to be like, I didn't even really do what I wanted to do. You know what I mean?
They used to clown the kid like, scared money don't make money. Now they doing biz, right? That's why conventional wisdom don't do nothing for me. Marvin Harrison passed the iron dungeon. Quiet ones be the shooters. He who dares wins, I'm down here with the losers. They robbed that white boy, cause this ain't Hoosiers. And stay looking for cracks like jewelers. Pressing like army recruiters. Maneuver underwater, Afghani in the scuba. Four Nigerians, one computer. Travailler, middle of the day, steak for two, Peter Luger. AK-47 with the cheese, smoke Gouda. Only priorities is right now, the near future. Optimistic, early morning between my first sip of coffee, last digit on my scratch-off ticket.
Tell me about Backwoods Records.
When I first started rapping, it was like I came up, when I first got my first shot to record, I came up, Border was working on a solo album, and he wanted me to do this song on a solo album. So I came to the studio and he was working at like Electric Lady Studios. So I'm like, oh my God, this is my first time I'm going to record at Electric Ladyland. Come in. I never even been in a studio. They got the Jimi Hendrix plaque. Da, 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 da. I go down there. I'm nervous as shit. Comes time for me to do my verse. And I'm so nervous. I'm not noticing that all the other people in the studio, which there were several, because this is the point at which like, people are still making money off indie rap.
Word.
There's several people in there. And I'm not really noticing that nobody in there wants me to be there except for Vortal.
Damn. How are they letting you know that they don't want you to be there?
Manager. And in retrospect, dismissive.
Damn.
Attitudes. Side eyes.
I've been there.
Yeah, that pretty much has it up.
I mean, I haven't been an Electric Lady, but I've been in that situation.
Yeah, nobody knew who I was. Yeah. I came in, no doubt, looking quite the country mouse.
How do you think they was feeling about Vortal at the time, though?
Oh, no, that was their meal ticket. Okay. What are you talking about? Like, Colvane was out. These guys are working on their solo album at that time. You know, like I'm saying, people are making money off this shit. And some of those people in that room went on to stepping stone their way to some significant careers, partially through like, you know, like A&Ring or managing like indie artists at that time, you know, it was just a different world. You could move from that to like, okay, now I'm like working on like Jim Jones, mm-hmm. you know, Purple City or some shit. So anyway, I get in the booth and granted, I had a lot of learning to do. Don't get it twisted. But every time I spit this verse, the engineer just came on and said, do it again.
Damn.
Do it again. And I'm sure it wasn't very good. I mean, the verse was probably pretty good, but there were a lot of things that I had to like get right or whatever. But that's the hostility and everything caught me off guard. And then, of course,
you start doubting yourself.
And so exactly. I was fucked. So at a certain point, it was like, all right, it's over. And Border was super nice. He was like, yo, I'm sorry, man, blah, 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 blah. And just hang out. But I'm blown. Because in my mind, of course, delusionally, I thought, this is my moment. You
man,
know what I mean?
Yo.
And so I leave out the studio, and it's pouring. I'm just going to dip. Trying to, you know, keep a little shred, you know, patch together, sew together some shreds of your, like, of your manhood and then leave with them, just a little bit, you know. I felt like my parents came too far for me to just sink into that couch and sit there, you know. I was like, I got to go home. So I get my shit together. It's probably like 2 a.m. I go outside. And at this, you know, you're underground. You have no idea the weather. As soon as I step out, it's pouring.
Oh, fuck.
And I'm like, well, there's no way I'm going back in there. So I go home, soaked in the rain, sitting on the train. And I literally had a, like, maybe I suck. Like, maybe this is the wrong move. Like, I saved all this money and I moved here thinking I was going to do this, and I might have just totally played myself. Because this is the first time I've been in the studio. And what basically, this is 2001.
You put out shit before then or no?
No.
Okay.
I never recorded my own voice in a studio.
Nothing to have confidence
Nothing. Although I've been writing rhymes for a while, you know. And so, then I get on the train, I'm going, and I'm like, you know, maybe I fucking suck. I'm like, maybe I really fucked up moving to New York, first of all, because that was the whole plan of moving here instead of the Bay Area, was because I was going to do music. And because I had a certain amount of money that I saved up and whatever.
Damn, New York, San Francisco, you was balling.
I was a little bit of both. I was naive and I had a small amount of money. And so then I was just like, man, yeah, that's... And then I remember I just decided, you know what? I can't ever be in that situation again. You know what I mean? I was like, I feel like I don't suck. I was like, I feel like maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was, but I don't think that I suck.
That's right.
And so from then... because it was like either quit or figure out, you know, and that's kind of been my whole career. It's been like either quit or figure it out, you know. And so I guess I, at that point, I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna like go book my own studio time, record my own shit, do my own thing. And I also benefited greatly from the fact that Porter was such a good friend and a kind soul to me, that like he came and like would like record with me for Camouflage, which ended up being my first record or whatever. He would come.
He recorded that.
He would come do some tracks and like whatever. And yeah, we just hung out a lot, you know? And so like, it was just a situation where then I just started going to the studio in Westchester, and I ended up with a great engineer and all of these situations. I was paying for my studio time. Believe that.
He was balling. That's cool.
I since have come to understand that I definitely was not. Although at the same time, that was probably the most money I ever had in my life.
That's what you was using on your dreams.
You know? You know what I mean? And so it was just funny because, yeah, looking back on it, it was like, from that point on, I was just like, all right, I got to do this. And then once I started doing it, I was like, all right, I'm to just put it out myself, I guess.
All right,
figure that out by myself.
Figure and out then the it was like,
eventually, I got a business partner, and other people came on board. Although I always was like putting my own money in too, you know. And so basically, that just happened because I felt like I needed to be in control because people hated my music.
Damn.
That's the long and short story of it. It's like people did not fuck with me.
That's a banger origin story for your album. That's tight. That was my talk with Billy Woods. I am happy about it. If you're happy about it, go rate it at iTunes, give it 1,000 stars, or the highest number that they'll let you get close to 1,000, which I'm pretty sure is 5. Do that, please. We have a new message board feature at infiniteguest.org where this podcast is housed. My podcast is housed. Infinite Guest is a podcast housing authority. I'm on the Section 8 part of Infinite Guest. Go leave a comment or holler at me at Mike Eagle, at Mike _ Eagle on the Twitter box. Go to iTunes first and give it a rating, give it a review, because they like that. And damn it, I like what they like. Hashtag poor corporate shill. Anyway, this is a song. This is a new song. This is a song that I did with Milo and Nalepa and Nick Thornburn from Island. It's on a compilation called Catcher of the Fade, which is probably out by the time you're hearing this. So you have a lot of internet homework today, don't you? The song's called Another One of Mine. Do all the stuff I said. And thank you for listening to Secret Skewed. You like how I dragged that last syllable out? Skewed. It's like an old black Vincent Price with a Jerry curl. Girl, let me get in your skin. Damn, that's fun. Anyway, here's a rap song.
I can be the Ubermensch, presently ensconced in a thick, thick loser stench. Let's use only the future tense. My collective is unconscious, though. Yeah, I can't forget when they auctioned us. Brown boy king, red crown glows phosphorus. Young Jung bumps sun kill moon wearing toe socks. I've got hymnals for the no knots. On tour and I'm weary of the dinginess. Tag my name in the Codex Serafinius. In Chicago, bleeding in a back alley. An olive tree thrives somewhere in the Napa Valley. Oh boy, I'm a big fucking moron. IMDb search life advice from Ghost Dog. Ushering a new era of raps post Herzog. This is just desserts for an old slob. Bow.
The saddest, it gets fairly overwhelming for my secretary Gladys. She prefer to only deal with my earnest business proposals, so she patently refuses all the passwords to my socials. She once happened on a message from an older friend from college who would like to end the crisis by drinking furniture pilots. I said, Gladys, this one's simple, she just needs someone to listen. Says she wasn't trained or paid enough for suicide prevention. Plus the reason people seek you when they can't hold it together is cause you seem to find the right words without too much sweat and effort. There ain't no Dr. Lecter. Dr. Scholl's a Dr. Pepper. Got a lady and the kid, and I gotta make these stupid records. Something's missing from this picture. Ain't none of these people worried about who listens to the listeners. Gladys told me, tell them fuck off if they such a waste of time. I never told her that depressed account was another one of mine.
First one to take it. Last one.